Anyway, I sort of thought that all I really would ever get is this quality of peace and relaxation, this quality of the practice being something that I brought to my life that would make my life easier, softer, make me softer, that there'd be this kind of overall happiness that I'd have in life. But this idea that I had read in stories or heard about of this awakened mind just never seemed possible when I started practicing. In early 2000, or maybe, the fall of 2001. So right around that time, Sharon Salzberg wrote this book about faith. And something changed between Sharon Salzberg's book and me going to Rodney's beginning class that fall. Something changed about practice. And I had been practicing for 10 years before I came to this place. I just had resolved that practice for me was going to be about just relaxation and peace. My mind was just too tough. I'd seen too much and been through too much. Not possible to awaken this aggressive mind that I had. Very averse, very angry, very tight. And so when I read Sharon's book, something changed. I had never sort of experienced this concept of faith in this practice world. There was always talk about almost like this kind of training the mind. But this idea of faith, when Sharon wrote that book, was the first time that it sort of opened up this capacity that this practice could be something more than just having a peaceful life. And I think that's what I want to talk about over the course of this month. How that happened. What is that? How is it that we turn this corner and go from this easeful, peaceful life to the possibility of an awakened mind? And the capacity that everybody in this room, no matter what you've come from, has that capacity for the awakened mind. And the best way to talk about that is through the five faculties. And so that's what I'd like to talk about this month, is the five faculties. I don't usually use the word faculties. I think I've used the phrase, have your wits about you, but faculties is not, that is not a hood word. So I looked it up to see what it is, this faculties. What does that mean? What is that pointing to? And it said that it's like an innate ability, right? This inherent capacity that we have. It's a power. In fact, I like the terminology, the five spiritual powers, better than I like the five faculties. It's sort of like this inherent, innate power that we all have. And one phrase said that it's any of the powers of the mind to form a basis for mental phenomena. It's a power of the mind, which is kind of strange. So we have this innate ability. And Buddha said we have five, not one, five innate capacities, innate abilities, powers. We have the capacity for faith. And in the sutta, he says conviction. We have the capacity for energy or persistence. The capacity for mindfulness, concentration, and the capacity for wisdom or discernment. So we're born with this capacity. It's not something that we learn over time. You had it when you were in the crib. That capacity was already there. And it is a natural aspect of the mind. So we have to think about this. We spend so much time in this practice talking about taming the mind, moving off of this thinking mind, moving away from that agitated mind, aggressive mind, that averse mind, clinging mind. We're just always kind of moving away from the mind. And in a way, it's almost like we've given the mind a kind of a bad rap. Like the mind is the problem. So if I can just move away from that, things would be better. And I do believe that when happiness or an easeful life or that initial way that I came into the practice, this wanting to be in a more peaceful state, I do believe that that's what practice is all about, is moving off the mind, moving off of that anger, moving off of that aggression or that aversion or whatever it is. We're always moving off of that. We're trying to gather the mind in this capacity to be still with one object and rest in this peaceful place. And, you know, we have all felt that. We've all had that. But that is not liberation of the mind. There is something else that is an awakened mind. And the five faculties, those five spiritual powers, is how we access that. And we access that through the mind. It's not even my capacity to do this. Not me, thankfully, because I wouldn't have that capacity. I didn't have it. I just didn't have any faith or any belief that I even had it. So even if I was sitting there reading books and listening to talks about this great awakened mind, I just never had that sense that it was me. I had this capacity to do this. Take some holy person, some special person with special things about them that could make them an awakened being, but not me. I came from way too much dysfunction for that. But what I begin to learn after reading Sharon's book and starting practicing in Sims over the years is that it was actually the getting me out of the way that created the capacity for this awakened mind or the possibility of an awakened mind to arise. It's the getting the me out of the way that ends up allowing the mind to do what it has the inherent, innate ability to do. So when I first started looking into this, you know, I have my own opinion about this. I have my own view, my own experience that I want to talk about. But I went to Bhikkhu Bodhi because I love Bhikkhu Bodhi. So, and I read something he said about what these five faculties are. He said that to think of the faculties as an active power which coordinates our natural energies towards the achievement of an inner harmony and balance. That's like a mouthful, right? It's an active power, not subdued power. It's an active power. And it is that power that coordinates our natural energies. And it coordinates those natural energies towards this achievement of an inner harmony and balance. We don't create that inner harmony and balance. It is within the mind and these spiritual powers that we have innately that creates that harmony and balance. He said that true freedom involves the attainment of inner autonomy, the strength to withstand the pushes and pulls of our appetite. So this true freedom, this liberation of the mind, this awakened mind is related to what he calls the attainment of inner autonomy. Not inner awareness, inner autonomy. And that inner autonomy is what gives us the strength to not be swayed by the pushing and the pulling of our wants and not wants, our likes and dislikes. There's an inner autonomy that is within us. It's developing that. And he said that's what it is. The development of this inner autonomy is what gives us this capacity, this inner autonomy. I don't really like the word development. It really feels a lot like that's something I would do. I would develop my inner autonomy. So I'm going to use this word cultivation, because the cultivation, I think it just feels like you don't make it happen, right? You can cultivate plants. You can have sunlight and you can have, well, I should say gardeners can cultivate plants. You can have sunlight and water and the right kind of soil. And then you have to, it grows on its own. Or in my case, it dies on its own. I've tried. I bring these plants in my house because I see other people and they have plants in their house and I'm like, they should have some greenery in the house, giving off oxygen, makes the place peaceful. So I bring the plants in, water it, give it all kinds of soil, talk to it. My sister said you should talk to the plants. I talk to them, they die. So whatever that cultivation is, whatever that thing that you do around the edges that creates the conditioning for this inner autonomy to come forth, that's the practice of the spiritual powers. Another way to think about it is, this makes a little bit more sense for me, is because I am musical. So if you could think of this as each one of these qualities, the practice itself of the five spiritual powers, is like a tuning fork. And when you hit it, it tunes into that part of us that's already there. And it tunes it to this level that we can begin to have this coordinated effort by this energy. When this power, when this innate power gets tuned, you know it. Because it is the reason why you could stay in joy, even if you lose your job. You know? Some unexpected, terrible thing could happen. And you are waking up happy. The people around you would look at you like, what is your problem? I remember when I stopped practicing law, I had more people crying around me and I was trying to console them, like, they're there. It's going to be okay. I was too happy to contain myself. It wasn't that I wasn't sad that I was leaving the practice, because I had done this for 25 years, but the possibility of doing something different was overwhelming to me. But that comes from this tuning of this inner autonomy. It doesn't come from me believing and knowing I'm going to do something else. There's something else that's holding you. There's something else that holds you so that even if life is not happening the way you want it to happen, you know, like we get into that kind of grumbling, you know, like the Mr. Grumpy, just grumbling, just all this negativity is all around. But you're like sitting there in peace with it. It's okay. I went and did this training right before the day of mindfulness from the beginner's class. And when I had some kind of allergic reaction, I think, to the detergent they used in the sheets. But by the day of mindfulness, I was itching like you would not believe. And it started Friday morning, and by Friday night, it was over the top. So I come to the day of mindfulness, and I'm just like a walking, itching, crazy woman. And you know how, I don't know if you guys have ever saw this commercial when I think iPods first came out. They would have people listening to the music, and then the shadow of them, they were just walking down the street, but the shadow was dancing and alive and crazy. So I'm sitting here peacefully in meditation, but on the inside, everything about me was just going crazy. It's not me that creates that capacity to sit still when everything about me is itching. There's something else that does that. And practicing with the five faculties is how we work towards that. It's the something else. It's the part of us that allows us to hold great difficulty, to hold this unexpected, unknown world. It's the part that allows us to actually see that everything is impermanent. Everything is in flux, everything is changing, nothing's gonna go the way we want it to go, and some things may go the way we want it to go, but then it's gonna end at some point. This whole dissatisfaction with life and this unpersonal way that life just sort of comes at us. If Tuareg tries to hold that, it doesn't work. I can't do it, but if I get out of the way, there's this innate ability. That's pretty much the overview of the five faculties. So we're going to talk about those over the 4 weeks. We're not going to have a discussion night. I'm sorry. I know that a lot of people here like having that discussion night. And so, but to me, to give these faculties justice, we should spend each night talking about a different one. And so each night we're going to talk about a different faculty, except for the third week, we're going to talk about mindfulness and concentration together. But tonight we're going to start with faith. Faith is probably my favorite subject. I have been on cloud nine for the last week about this subject because I think I tried to figure out why do I have such a resonance with this idea of faith. And I think it comes from growing up in a black church world where faith was everything. And so when you would go to church, you would throw everything about the week away. You'd go to church and everything that was bad, every grumbling, every mess, bad boss, crazy coworkers, it didn't matter. Whatever happened all day, kids getting crazy, it didn't matter. You just throw it away at these church services. And that act seemed to make everything better and you could start the new day. So I think there's a part of me that has an inherent kind of capacity for this idea of faith. And when I first started practicing before Sharon's book, I think I had faith in this Christian practice. And then this Buddhist kind of mindfulness practice was something I did to make life easier. But I didn't really have what I would consider faith in that practice. It was just something that I did to try to make life easier, like a philosophy or something like that. In Sharon's book, she talks about what faith is. She says it's a verb. I just so like the Pali, because in Pali, everything seems to be verbs. I can't believe how much we live in a noun world. It's this, it's this, it's this, it's this, it's this. So faith has this is what it is. And if you have never read Sharon's book, this is definitely an advertisement to read that book about faith, because it is primo, the authority on faith. But she says that faith is this kind of a verb that means of the heart. Of the heart. I think that's what she said it was. Yeah. To place upon the heart. Faith is this capacity that we have to place upon the heart, this willingness to put something with the level of kindness of the heart, to hold something with the heart. It's also called the seed, it's the soft spot, it's the place in us that everything grows out of. It's a start. So for some of you, the word faith might have a negative connotation to it, and so when I looked up the actual sutta on this on these five faculties, the translation was conviction, a conviction, to be convinced. So this conviction, it could be thought of that way, that you have this conviction towards practice. When you have this conviction, something happens. When you place it upon the heart. When I think about my heart's connection to anything, I am much more softer with it. Doesn't even matter what it is. If it's of the heart, it feels softer, it feels kinder, but it also feels much more fierce. When I think about what I would do on behalf of people I care about, it is not a wimpy kind of soft, please don't mess with them. It's not like that. It's a fierceness. Don't mess with people. And that is the heart's energy. The heart, sometimes, I think because we make the little heart shapes and we think about love and we think about it from the romantic point of view, that there's this kind of mushy way that we hold the heart. But when you put your heart in something, there is a capacity, a courage, a sense of conviction that you can hold and deal with anything. And that is the place that faith rides up out of. So in Buddhism, there's three. They say three aspects of faith. The first is this blind faith. And I thought I would spend the time talking about faith from how this change happened with me when I came to Sims. I can't think of any other way to help you see the changes in faith other than talking about this in relation to Sims. So I come to Sims, and first let me just tell you what blind faith is. Blind faith is this kind of faith. It's bright, it's energetic, usually shows up when we first start practice, but you can think of it as something that sort of shows up in the possibility that anything or any level in your practice. You could be practicing for a long time, like I had practiced for a long time, and then all of a sudden I had this moment into bright faith. It's sort of the part of faith that gives us hope, that gives us this kind of leaning into, wonderment. It's kind of a trusting energy. You're trusting in something. Something happened, something got sparked in you, and you're trusting something is out there, but you don't have a clue what that is. And that trusting nature, that hopeful, inner, bright energy is what it traps us. It catches us. It's as if I begin to see that this practice that I thought I would use to make things better and easier, I saw there was something else that I could tap into, something that existed outside of me that I could tap into, and I wanted to tap into that. So when I went to the beginner's class with Rodney, I think some of you know, I had this moment that it wasn't just, oh, I like this practice. I already had the practice. In fact, when I went, my friend wanted to go, go to this beginner class with her because, you know, I already know how to do this, but she needs help. She needs support. So I basically was going just to help her learn how to meditate. And something about that class triggered something in me. I didn't expect it. It just happened. I want to read this little quote from a Tibetan Lama, Anagarika Govinda. She says, "The forces which move the cosmos are no different from those which move the human soul." The forces that move the cosmos are no different from those which move the human soul. So the forces that turns this earth, that moves us around the sun, is no different than what's inside of us. That's what happened when I went to that beginner's class. Something happened. Something got turned on. And this practice, the idea of an awakened mind, was not something that holy people do in caves somewhere. I wanted to know that. I wanted to see that. I wanted to investigate that, figure that out. I used to tell people all the time, I'm going to get awakened in this lifetime. This is when it's going to happen, this lifetime. I don't think anybody ever believed me, but there was something about that idea that this was not just a self-help thing that I did amongst all the other self-help things I did. There was something else, and that class did it. just opened the floodgates. So I used to come to Sims every single week. My friends stopped coming. I kept coming. Every week, I'm coming. When we first came, we were at Keystone. You could come. You could come late, like 5 minutes into it, almost like right at the time. I can't remember what time it was, but right at the time. And you could still walk all the way across the, we were in the basement, you could walk all the way across the basement and find yourself a seat. And then one day, we had to sit on the steps in the basement. I don't even know how that happened. It was packed in this room. And my friend was like, oh, well, we'll just, you know, come later, let's go home. I'm like, no, we're sitting on the steps. For the whole 2 hours, I sat on the steps. There was a conviction in this. Something here is happening, and I'm not going to miss it. And then I would go and pick her up way early so we could come, get there early, and I could get all the way across and sit. I used to buy little notepads, those little tiny books. And I would write everything Rodney said. I would sit there with my little book and I would label it, what talk it was, when he gave it, how he gave it, and I would write it and write it and write it. Because everything about what had happened to me was as if there was something I was going to miss and I needed to get it. I had to learn it. Get it. That's that bright face. It's so big and it's so, you're so overwhelmed in a good way that you are plowing into this. And everything that is your normal routine, you are willing to put it by the side. Doesn't matter what it is. We might be getting a little bit fanatical. Those are probably some of the words. Born again. I think my friend thought I was a little crazy, obsessive. These are kinds of the words she said. But something, I didn't even know what it was. But there was a sense, this is where I was going to go. But at some point, well, just to tell you, that's the only reason why a black woman could come to a sit with couple hundred people and there's only you. By the time we got to Beth Shalom, there were over 100 people coming every week and there's me. So no one spoke to me for 3 years. We didn't speak. It isn't like we had the discussion nights. That came later. In the beginning, you came 2 hours. You're in silence. You sit. And I was hanging on every word Rodney said. Because at that time, in this bright faith, it's almost like you think somebody's going to give you something, and that's how you're going to make it. You got to get it. And when you get it, then you're going to be okay. But then this turn kind of happens. It's not like you can make this turn happen. It happens on its own. There's a moment, a time, a period when something begins to turn. And it's no longer about you getting what people have. It's no longer about let me take in all this information. You have something, I want to get it, and as soon as I get it, I'll be okay. It's not like that anymore. You want to know for yourself. There's this place where I wanted to know. I didn't want to just hear Rodney talk about this liberated mind. I wanted to know, what is this liberated mind? It's like I didn't care that Rodney had this liberated mind. I wanted to know, so what would that look like? How would I get that? Where would it come from? And you're turning away from this bright faith, which is connected to some other thing that you're driven by, to this much more what's called verified faith. You want to know for yourself, in your own experiences, what is this liberated mind? And so I begin to try out everything Rodney would say. Probably the homeworks, they are so important if you use them. You have to try them. You have to try this practice out. I think sometimes that this verified faith place gets a little difficult because two things are happening. We are building on this energy that we have. We're building on this faith, and we're kind of tuning these powers, especially our conviction, our faith, we're tuning it in. And now we have this capacity where we want to know for ourselves, and we're trying all these things out. But two things can show up. One is we can get so caught in the intellectualization of it because mentally we understand what's going on. I had the list, I had all my little booklets, I used to read them. Probably, I think the most faithful thing I ever did was one day I threw those booklets away. Just think about all the little notes you have from all the talks Rodney gave. I threw them away. It was during this period of this is my faith now. But all these little booklets, I would read them, look through them, go through some kind of a process to kind of understand it. I wanted to understand every little list. So I don't know if you guys have seen that diagram that has all the little Buddha parts and the little circular, and I used to read it, I took it to work, and every day at lunchtime I'd study it, and this works with this, works with that, oh, and then I'd understand that and this, and it was just all this work. But all of that was intellectualizing practice. And we can get caught in this verifying time that the mind understands this thing that I'm doing. At the same time, there's so much of energy going on, so much practice, so much work, you can also get caught in the doubt of the mind that you're not doing this good enough. I'm not still enough. I'm not working hard enough. There's all this mental capacity and papancha, talking that can go on. You have to be careful for that because it can throw you off. As a lawyer, we have this database that you can look up cases on. Old lawyers, we used books. So you had these little books and you had to learn in law school how to look up the word and then go to this set of books and then that book led you to another case and you could find all the cases you want by looking up through these books. And we had to learn this when I was in law school. But right about the time I was in law school, they also had this database online. And so all the books were put into this database and you had to learn how to use that database. I could not get it. I would put in my search 50,000 cases. It's not the same. If you had the book, then you read three cases. But in this database, you put, if you didn't have a deep search engine, you get 50,000. You could go completely off topic looking through these cases, because you'd read some case, you get interested in that, and next thing you know, you're on a completely different line. Not even you don't need that law. It's like, I hated it. And sometimes during this verified faith time, that's sort of what happens. You can get lost in the intellectualizing and the kind of doubting yourself about practice. But we're going to talk as the weeks go on. There are other energies that help line us up. There are other powers, innate capacities that are like tuning forks for those capacities that cheer us up and keep us from getting too far out there. Jack Kornfield has this statement. Just so you guys know, I have a little day calendar. And every time I'm going to give a talk, I pick out the sayings for that month. Hopefully, like auspicious energy around this month. So this is Jack Kornfield's statement. Says, reality, enlightenment, and the defined must shine through every morning, every moment, or it is not genuine. Reality, enlightenment, or the divine, it must shine through every moment, or it is not genuine. So during this period of this verified faith, what you're really doing is beginning to shine this light in every moment. You're beginning to see Dhamma not as something you do so you can be better, but Dhamma is your life. It is it. If it gets too intellectualized, something's missing here. And we'll see as we look at these other faculties how that capacity gets lined up. I used to go to every beginner's class day of mindfulness. 2-day non-residential, I was there because I could not afford to go to a retreat. And so I would go to these 2-day non-residentials. And I'd come every week, and everything about what was happening was beginning to change things. I stopped writing down what Rodney said, and instead, I would just hear it. I would begin to trust that somehow or another, I already understood what it is that he was saying. I didn't have to write it down and then reread it to memorize it. I just started practicing every day. And it moves us into what they call this abiding faith. And in abiding faith, you don't really need anybody else's opinion about any of the practice. You already know. It's not whether you can learn. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying you don't need anybody anymore. It's not that. But I don't need someone else to convince me I can liberate the mind. I don't need that. I don't need anyone to come along and try to give me a talk that says, oh, keep it up. You can liberate the mind. It's not like that. In Sharon's book, on the cover, it's called Faith. But the phrase says, trusting your own deepest experience. That is about the best phrase I have ever heard for what abiding faith is. It is that inner autonomy that gets created, that inner capacity, somehow or another, your faith is your faith. Your conviction, your practice, your Dhamma is your Dhamma. So So when I went on this retreat, this long retreat I went on in 2013, I had this tremendous bout of fear. Stupid fear. I mean, fear that probably was in the deep recesses of my pores in the body. I don't know if I ever told you guys this, but I got so scared one night that I had this nightmare that my bed and the room was covered with snakes everywhere. And I jumped up and I bolted out that door and I ran all the way down to the dining hall. And I'm sitting in the dining hall, too scared to go back. And I was sure that there were snakes in my room. They were in my bed. They were in my room. I cannot do this. And during that verified faith time, I made this kind of agreement with myself that said, I was going to double check anything that freaked me out, just to make sure that it's not coming from childhood. So I'm sitting here in the dining hall at like 3 o'clock in the morning with tea, and I hear this voice say, you got to double check. I'm like, nope, don't have to double check. I already know. You should double check. Double check. Make sure. Go back and check. And I remember walking back. I'm scared just thinking about it. Walking back to this room, knowing that if I opened that door, all these snakes were going to come running out. That is abiding faith. First, to go back to the room that you think is full of snakes. There's some courage in there. That's abiding in this. There was nobody sitting there with me saying, Tawari, let's go check. You and me together, we're going to go do this. There was no Rodney giving me the talk on fear. None of that. This is you and your fear, and you're sitting there scared to death. So I walked back to the room. I pushed open the door, had this agreement with myself. If there's no snakes in the room, we'll stay in the room. If there's any snakes in there, we're getting a new room. That's it. We're not going to try to work through snakes. Pushed open the door, no snakes. I stayed in that room. So this is a room that I had a major nightmare, and I stayed in that room for the whole 6 weeks. That is abiding faith, because what kept me in the room had nothing to do with anybody else. It's my own practice, my own capacity to work with the fears and the angers and the worries that come up. So I want to share one more story. I've been with Sims for 15 years. That's a long time. I pretty much came almost every week. I love this place. I love this Sangha. There's an abiding capacity of the Sangha, and I know the things that I have gone through over the years being here is that sense of refuge and reassurance. It can be fine. So when all this stuff happened, I was so embarrassed that the idea of coming in front of people would be, it would not be okay. especially since I missed the big talk. I wasn't here. And that next week, Linda and I were walking down, bless her heart, she's so sweet. We're walking down and I said, Linda, one person is gonna look at me sideways and I'm walking out that door, that's it. Linda was so sweet, she's like, oh, I don't think it's gonna be like that. I'm like, I'm just getting ready, getting prepared. But deep inside, I knew I was fine. I knew I was okay. And there's this part that said, this is my Sangha, here, this place. This is where I wanted to be. And everything that is the thinking mind of Tuareg was like, don't go, it's gonna be bad, don't go, don't go, don't go. So thankfully, when we got here, it was all quiet. And a couple of people smiled, said hi to her. And then we all sat. But by the end of the night, I had more people hugging and talking, so happy to see me, that this capacity to be able to be solid here, that comes from having an abiding faith. It does not come from our own mind. I mean our own thinking mind. Because the thinking mind in me was like, no, no, no. It comes from something else. Some capacity beyond that. So how do we cultivate this faith? How do you cultivate the capacity to step into a room that you think, right or wrong, nobody's gonna like you. That you think everybody in that room is ready to kick you back out. How do you step in there and feel like you belong there? It comes from cultivating these refuges of the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. Cultivating these refuges meaning that we look for things to put our refuge in. We look for things to put our refuge in, like money. We look for things to put our refuge in our houses, food. What if you put your refuge in the idea that you have the capacity to awaken your mind? If you put your refuge in the principles of the Dhamma and the Sangha that you practice it, you cared for that Sangha, you put your heart towards it. What if you begin to question everything, right? What if you begin to question, instead of just sitting there in the peaceful sit, what if you question, why is this sit peaceful and yesterday's sit was not peaceful? What if you started questioning why you have to act angry when you're frustrated? Question everything. For those of you that used to go to Sims, we have Blowdown Hall. I used to ask questions every time. No, Rodney was tired of my questions. How come that is that way? Why do we have to do this? Are you saying I have to like those defense attorneys? What are you saying? I just asked questions constantly in this capacity to begin to question into what's happening. Even though we don't always talk about questions and questioning, but the questioning is what triggers, it's like the tuning of you towards your own experience. Something about that. Carve out time for more practice, longer practice, days of mindfulness, two-day non-residentials. Carve that time out. You may not be able to go to a retreat, but carve out some time to sit and practice and let all that irritation, boredom, this is stupid, why am I doing this? Let all that come up so you can practice through that. And then the last thing is, be still with difficulty. Be still with it. Wait a minute when you're irritated or frustrated or impatient. I don't like it. Be still with that. And see what happens if you don't do anything. What happens? Can you say that? If you don't dwell in the story, what happens to all of this emotional energy? So be still with difficulty. It's how you see that something else rises. After you stop connecting to the thinking mind, something else rises. That something else is what we're talking about this month. This is what Pema Chodron said. She said, theism is a deep-seated conviction that there is some hand to hold. I so love her. Theism is a deep-seated conviction that there is some hand to hold. That's it. Your hand. It's not about believing in, this faith is not about believing in whether or not I believe in the Four Noble Truths. Do I believe in karma? Do I believe in Buddha? Is he a god? Is he not a god? Do I believe in God? That is not the faith we are talking about. We are talking about a deep-seated conviction that there is some hand to hold. Let's sit for a moment. So, if you have something you want to share, we have just about 5 minutes or so, and then we'll have our announcements.
Probably is kind of a loaded word in our culture, I think, especially for people like me. So faith was it was sort of synonymous childhood coercion, lack of questioning, sort of impression. And so that's I still feel that discomfort with that word. And yes, my coming to this practice, it's really about, it feels like trust.
Yeah.
It seems like a better word for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's, for those of you that didn't hear, he said that he had some problems with the word faith. He had read Sharon's book, and that, but the word that that resonates with him is trust. And he can trust in the process. And that is that kind of capacity, that trusting word. I totally agree with you. Calling it trust, calling it conviction, I mean, whatever word it is for that energy, it's not even the faith, it's not even the word that they used in Pali as much as it is of the heart. So, yeah, I think we call it that word, and it does have some negative connotations to people. But that quality of trusting, even in the abiding trusting, even if you did not call it faith and said it was bright trust or verifying trust or abiding trust, that abiding trust is the same quality, that it is the capacity that this practice becomes yours, not someone else's, not this following some other doctrine. So yeah, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so the question is, how do you bring this level of like bright verifying faith or this abiding faith, trust, whatever we want to call it, how do you bring that into like a work situation when it's a different world? That is it, isn't it? So I'm a little hesitant to say, because that is the nature of it. You sort of have to say, how do I bring this here? I was a lawyer, a prosecutor at that. People don't even think prosecutors meditate. So when people would hear, you're a prosecutor, you meditate? Like, I don't know what kind of energy people thought prosecutors had. Maybe they think we should meditate. But if I were to give you some words, that's what you would take and then start trying to do it, right? Bringing probably one of the best things, Rodney gave us a homework one time, and he said, you know, you had to practice some way with not talking. And so I chose the first 5 minutes of being in a courtroom. And if you've ever been in a courtroom with a prosecutor and defense attorney, it's crazy in the first 5 minutes. So my thoughts were, there's no way I could do this. But I wanted to see what would happen if in the first 5 minutes of me being in court for an entire week, I did not talk. What would that look like? We're just gonna try it out, right? I did. No arguing. No arguing, no fighting, no drama. The next week when I went to talk to, when we were at Rodney, I raised my hand and I'm like, I think something's wrong here, because it implies that I was the reason why we were having all these arguments. Once I stop talking, everything's okay. But actually what it was I was not like reactive. I was not like prejudging what they're gonna say before they even sat down. That I actually listened. Do you see? So it could be something as simple as that. How you bring in, if you notice that the pace is quickened and you notice it's going fast, then how do I bring stillness and slowness into a quickened pace? Therein lies the Dhamma. Therein lies liberation. Once you come up with how that works and how you bring that in, look for it and find it, it changes the whole nature of work. But that is how you liberate the mind, how we awaken the mind, is that in the midst of this quick pace, you ask yourself, how do I bring Dharma in that? You know, how do I let all these people at work know that I sit in the lunchroom? I sit in my office before I come into the lunchroom. So don't come knocking on my door saying, let's go get something to eat. I put a little sign out there that said, I'm meditating, don't knock on the door. People knocked on the door anyway. Are you still meditating? So, that it's sort of like that, right? That's how we begin to build this trust and capacity in the practice, is that the places where we're having the difficulty, we start searching into them. We start figuring out, how does this practice work in the everyday? Okay? All right, we probably should stop. So, do I do the rides first, or do we do the announcements first? Okay, good, 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 good. All right, thank you.